The king had been attacked by a dark lord in the form of a nasty possession worm. Braden Bratianu had been linked to the heart of the House of Jaden. He had been linked to the venerable king. While he occasionally had premonitions, he more often had sensations. Bits and pieces of feelings and thoughts, some sort of supernatural knowing, the ability to pick up on random impressions that were floating through the ether. If it affected the House of Jaden, Braden was open game. He could feel it, taste it, smell it, or just sense it, and it often manifested in his body. When the king had been hurt, Braden had puked out his guts, and over time he had come to distinguish the sons of Jaden from their powerful ancient king by where he felt the sensations. If this one was in his head, then he was picking something up from another male, someone other than Napoleon. Christina rested her palms on his knees and softened her voice to just above a whisper.
"Okay, so, any dreams? Any visions? Anything concrete?"
"Nope," he muttered. "Just a headache. And it's not really even that. Just like a pulse in my temple that makes me a little dizzy." Christina studied him with concern.
"So breathe through it, then. Let the impression come in fully so it can pass."
Braden's eyes met hers before he closed them.
"Breathe in through your nose," she guided. "Now out through your mouth."
She watched as his chest began to rise and fall with deep diaphragm breathing.
"Good. Keep going. Now what do you sense?"
He shook his head softly.
"Nothing, really."
She tried to be more specific.
"Do you smell anything?"
"No."
"Taste anything?"
"Nope."
"Keep breathing,"
she instructed, wading through several more breaths.
"What about physical imprints? Can you touch, feel, grab hold of anything?"
He shook his head again.
"Okay, what about your hearing? What do you—"
"A two-toned rose," he muttered quietly. Christina frowned.
"Come again?"
"A rose. Two tones. Black and red."
Christina's eyes grew wide, but she didn't let her anticipation affect her voice.
"Are you seeing it or feeling it?"
"Nah," Braden said. Just picking it up. It's just like, it's there."
"Okay,"
Christina responded.
"Anything else about the rose?"
Braden grew pensive, quiet and serene.
"The red, it's more like crimson, for passion. And the black, it's death and foreboding."
He jolted backward.
"The black is swallowing the red."
Christina didn't flinch. She waited for the knowing to pass, until Braden reopened his eyes.
"Feel better?"
she asked.
"Yeah," he said. "That was eerie."
"No shit,"
she agreed, flashing him a cautious smile.
"What do you think it was about?"
Braden stared off into the distance, then slowly shrugged his shoulders.
"No idea, Christina."
"Should we tell someone?" she asked. "Maybe Marquise or Julian, Nakari at the least?"
Braden shook his head.
"If I reached out to one of my brothers,"
he was referring to the entire House of Jaden,
"every time I felt a twinge, saw an image, or had an impression, that's pretty much all I'd do. It's obviously something meaningful, but there wasn't enough information. I think we should just monitor it. See if it grows or changes, if more information pops up. I think we should wait."
Christina nodded, not missing his reference to we, to the two of them, monitoring the situation together.
"It may just be jitters or some other dumb shit,"
he added, apparently wanting to appease her.
"You know, my parents' upcoming visit."
Christina nodded more forcefully then. Yeah, she definitely knew that was a sore spot, and whatever Julian Lacusta had said or done to Dario and Lily Bratianu, the couple was headed to Dark Moon Vale on Saturday to see about their son, to finally make an effort and visit. It was about damn time, she thought. She let the silence linger as Braden seemed to come back to himself, to shake off whatever had been plaguing him.
"You okay to shop?"
she finally asked. Before she could catch it or stop him, he reached out with one hand, lifted her jaw, and placed a soft, tender kiss directly on her lips.
"Yeah. And thank you, Red."
He whispered the words against her mouth before slowly pulling away. Christina froze.
"Braden."
He waited for her reprimand.
"You're still too young. I'm still too old."
He chortled good-humoredly deep in his throat and murmured,
"Young, old, you're mine, Christina. And in case you didn't notice, you're also shivering."
She glanced down at her hands and flushed. "Well, shit. Time to head for the mall." 10. Still caged like a captive animal in Owen's warehouse, Kiera Sparrow shut the bathroom door behind her and drew a deep, fortifying breath for courage. As moonlight shined through the arched bathroom window, she peeked through the glass and counted the tears, considering her looming fate. She was being held captive in a 5-story warehouse somewhere in downtown Denver, and no one was coming to save her. Hell, she didn't usually call her parents, Jackson and Pam, until Friday or Saturday night, reserving their catch-up conversations for the weekends when she had more time to talk. Travis and Owen had abducted her on Sunday. It was now Tuesday night, and that meant her parents wouldn't notice her absence for another 4 or 5 days. As for her job, she played violin with a local symphony and in several orchestra pits. She also taught private lessons. So unless and until she missed several practices in a row, or stood up a handful of students, no one would wave a red flag. If anything, she might get fired or replaced, and her private pupils would just get angry. As it stood, Kiera was on her own. And in this moment, the only moment that mattered, Owen had allowed her exactly 30 minutes to retreat in privacy and take a bath. He had probably grown weary with her unkempt appearance, to say nothing of the fact that she was likely beginning to stink.
"Keep the door unlocked," he had warned her, "or I swear I will break it down, and you won't appreciate what happens when I snatch you out of that tub."
The threat had been clear and unambiguous, but Kiera didn't have time to quake in her metaphorical boots. From the moment Xavier Matista had entered the lofty urban tenement on Monday morning, ordered Kiera to play her violin, and then hung around like a vulture, to the moment he had finally left around noon, Kiera had done nothing but plot. She absolutely, positively had to get out of that warehouse before that monster came back. She could not withstand another visit from the terrifying tyrant, the leader of the Midwest region of hunters. And just what the hell was that all about? While pretending to be browsing through sheet music, some dystopian assortment that Xavier had brought her, she had overheard the headhunter and Owen talking about things she couldn't wrap her arms around. Vampires and blood moons, stakes and diamond-tipped bullets, secret societies of regional hunters, and things that went bump in the night. To make matters worse, they had implicated Kyla in their crazy, far-fetched discussion. They had said she was a hunter on a vital mission. They had indicated that she was hiding out in Dark Moon Vale with some man. No, some vampire, named Saxon Olaru, and that she was going to ensure his death, and possibly murder the children of his friends. If Kiera hadn't known better, she would have sworn that she was dreaming. Maybe she'd entered the Twilight Zone, that her own mind had snapped, cracked, and broken, and she was several cards shy of a full playable deck. But that's when Owen had whispered in a chilling but insistent tone,
"I really believe we can trust her, sir. Don't forget, the moment she recognized that a blood moon was happening, she reached out and turned in her sister. She also got that tattoo and went home with the vampire. She's determined to make the most of this opportunity. She's been ready and waiting for years."
Kiera had shivered at the words. At least part of them were true. Kyla had been in on Kiera's abduction, and that meant Kiera wasn't altogether crazy. And neither were these men. But what the hell? She glanced down at her inner left wrist and trembled at the sight of the enigmatic markings. A flesh-and-blood pictorial of the constellation Cetus, the sea monster, engraved into her flesh. Maybe it wasn't an occultist tattoo at all. She remembered the color of that moon, that crimson dark-red moon, and how it had spurred her twin into action, precipitated Kyla's betrayal. Just what was her sister involved in, and what had she done to Kiera? The sound of the water rushing out of the smooth bronze faucet and pouring into the sunken jetted tub brought Kiera back into the moment. She needed to stay focused, laser-focused. There would be plenty of time to ruminate later. Eyeing a couple inches above the jets, she measured the water line and nodded. There was enough water in the basin to turn on the pumps, and that would provide an extra layer of protection, a barrier against any sound. While she had to be super careful to remain beyond the sight lines of the open wrought-iron alcoves, and there would be nothing she could do if Owen sauntered into the bathroom and caught her in the act of preparing, she had to take the chance. She didn't believe Owen would harm her. Okay, so she didn't believe he would actually rape her. Xavier was much too possessive over Kiera, much too terrifying to oppose. But she didn't doubt for a moment that Owen could and would make her life a living hell, fear of the headhunter notwithstanding. Still, none of that mattered right now, and she briskly shook her head to dismiss the thought. Focus, Kiera, focus. The last two times she had been allowed to use the bathroom, she had rummaged through the drawers and peered beneath the cabinets, searching for something, anything she might use as a weapon, anything she might use to escape. And that's when she had noticed the sheets, a stack of prim white bed slips, neatly folded within a narrow linen closet at the back of the upscale powder room, beyond the sight lines of the bathroom alcoves. That's when the idea had fallen into place. Sheets could be torn into strips. Strips could be tied into knots. And knotted sections could be linked into a rope. That's when she had studied the thin iron bars over the anterior bathroom window, leading out to a 50-foot drop-off ending at an alley floor. Knowing there was no way in heck she was going to walk or run out the front sliding door and escape through the access elevator, she had finally hatched a plan. The bars were secured with thick, sturdy bolts, about 1/2 inch thick each, and while she could never wrench them loose with her hands, a tuning fork might do the trick, a little at a time. One of the old-fashioned kind, thick and flat, the kind she had recently requested from Owen under the guise of fine-tuning the violin, wanting to get even richer sound out of the instrument. For Xavier. In the meantime, she had to tear the sheets, tie them together in knots, and then replace them at the bottom of the linen closet, carefully concealed, and she had to do it efficiently enough to still make time to take a bath. She could not begin to loosen the bolts on the windows until the tuning fork arrived, but she needed to make hay while the sun shined, so to speak, every time she was in the bathroom. There were no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Kiera had to escape. There was no way, absolutely no way, she could endure another meeting with Xavier, the bastard who had stroked his groin as she'd played her violin, the monster who had promised to siphon and test her blood, the beast who had nipped at her throat, with his teeth. Just what the heck was wrong with these people anyway? What kind of drugs were they on? And Kyla. Kyla? Kiera's heart was broken. How could she have betrayed her like this? The sheets. Damn it, time was running out. Her heart beating like a Celtic drum and quaking in her chest, Kiera scurried to the closet, dropped to her knees, and gathered the first sheet in her quivering hands. She began to tear it with her teeth. One long, even, narrow strip.
Courage isn't having the strength to go on. It is going on when you don't have strength, she whispered, quoting Napoleon Bonaparte.
Kiera would not be distracted by her twin's betrayal. She would not be dissuaded by all the insane talk about dark, haunted valleys and creatures with fangs, vampires named Saxon Olaru. Saxon. Olaru. Why did that name strike a chord in her heart, a vibration that reverberated all the way down to her soul? Why, out of all the mystifying details she had heard, was his name the one thing that made Kiera want to weep? She shook her head and hurried her pace, moving to another fresh strip. Wrench, tear, repeat. Wrench, tear, repeat. She gritted her teeth and continued. 11. Saxon Olaru swept his hand through his hair in an absent gesture, threw back his head, and laughed.
Inquisitorium? He teased. That isn't a word.
Kyla smiled.
Sure it is.
She tapped the Scrabble board and laughed. Saxon leaned forward from his lazy perch on the living room rug and stared at his destiny intently. She was quite the spitfire, this female.
I'm really sure it isn't.
Kyla snatched a nearby pencil and began to count the points, ready to tally them on her notepad.
Give me the definition,
Saxon demanded, still chuckling. Kyla shrugged.
Inquisitorium. A place one goes to ask a lot of questions.
This time, she was the one who laughed. The sound of her cell phone ringing in Saxon's pocket brought them both up short.
Are you going to let me check my messages?
She asked in a semi-sheepish voice. Saxon thought about it. He could do better. He would do better. She had given him no reason not to trust her. Thus far, since pre-dawn Monday morning, when he had taken her phone away, she had remained completely acquiescent. She hadn't objected when he had called his brother Santos and given him Kyla's address, asking him to break into her apartment, pack a suitcase full of her things, and leave them in Saxon's doorway. She had perused the online catalog, purchasing everything else she might need for next-day delivery, and she had allowed him to keep her phone, just as a precaution, until they grew to trust each other more. She had even agreed to leave messages, implicitly dictated by Saxon, with her various friends and family later in the week, so her absence wouldn't spark any suspicion. And as for her job? Well, that wasn't going to be an issue. Apparently, Kyla had some strange sort of arrangement with a private investigation firm in Denver. She was a gopher of sorts, a jack-of-all-trades, conducting research, taking photographs, staking out persons of interest on behalf of lucrative clients. She swore she wouldn't be missed. Her boss, whom she'd never met in person, paid her a monthly salary as a direct deposit into her bank account, regardless of the amount of work she did or didn't do. And he issued directives, which she referred to as orders, missions, or spur-of-the-moment assignments, via email or text as various jobs popped up. It sounded shady as hell, but Saxon wasn't that concerned. He could and would trace the monthly deposits back to their owner, look into the firm, and eliminate any threat to Kyla, any underhanded dealings or dealers, once they had moved beyond the blood moon. Right now, they had much more pressing issues, and Kyla was safe in Saxon's care. He withdrew the phone from his pocket and glanced briefly at the screen.
It's a text, not a call, he stated matter-of-factly. Someone named Owen.
She licked her bottom lip and waited.
You can read it, but you can't reply. Not unless you're willing to show me what you've typed before you send.
He cocked one shoulder in a gesture of apology.
I'm sorry, love. I just can't take that chance right now. We're not there, yet.
Kyla swallowed hard, sucking up any possible retort, her throat visibly constricting.
I understand,
she said in a monotone voice, reaching out to take the phone. Saxon placed it in her palm and waited while she swiped the screen, entered her password and read the text. A very, very long text. Twice.
Everything okay?
He asked once she had finally finished. She quickly closed the screen, turned off the phone, and handed it back to Saxon.
Yeah, everything's fine.
You sure?
She nodded slowly.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm positive.
Saxon flashed his sexiest smile.
Who's Owen?
He would be remiss not to ask, especially if Kyla had some sort of entanglement, before the vampire had claimed her. If so, they would need to address it, discuss it, take care of it. Kyla shrugged, appearing indifferent.
Oh, Owen? He's just a colleague of mine, a guy I work with. He's on vacation in New Zealand, and he was just telling me everywhere he's been, everything he's done, everything he's seen. He tends to be a little wordy.
She smiled sweetly, and then she sighed.
Saxon,
he raised his brows.
Considering everything that has happened, everything you've told me, all the adjustments we both have to make, this should really be the other way around. You should be reassuring me, trying to win my trust, making every moment easier for both of us.
Kyla,
wait.
She held up her hand.
Let me get this out. If there's an elephant in the room, we may as well address it. Saxon.
She repeated his name in a no-nonsense tone.
What can I do to earn your trust?
Saxon rolled lazily from his side to his back, executing an effortless sit-up with the strength of his muscular abs. He grasped Kyla by both hands and fell back into a prone position, bringing her with him, settling her on top of his chest. And then he wrapped his arms around her and met her seeking gaze. Her startled gasp did not escape his attention, but it didn't deter him either. He was committed to trying harder, and now was as good a time as any.
"You can admit that inquisitorium is not a word,"
he whispered huskily, tunneling his hand in her hair, tilting her head forward and bringing her mouth to his. And then he kissed her, languid, hungry, deep, coaxing her response with his tongue. Kyla shivered beneath his ministrations, her hands pressing back against his chest, but she didn't pull away from his embrace. Rather, she deepened the contact and moaned into his mouth, almost as if she couldn't help it. Saxon swept his hands along the curve of her hips, up along the narrow of her waist, and just below her breasts, where his thumbs rested erotically beneath the natural swell. Her chest heaved with increasingly ragged breaths, and more than a little trepidation. He didn't raise his hand any further. He just allowed the moment to linger. When she finally pulled away, he brushed her hair out of her eyes and smiled.
"I'm sorry if I've hurt your feelings, Kyla. You are my destiny, and I want this to work. I need this to work. More than you will ever know."
Kyla Sparrow struggled to get a grip, to stop the room from spinning, her knees from quaking, and her libido from taking off and leaping. The vampire's hands were pure magic. His voice was unadulterated silk, and his kiss, that kiss, holy shit. She had never experienced anything like it, but she wasn't there to play Scrabble or to make out on the living room floor. She had told Saxon the truth, at least partially, about Owen texting, mostly because he had already seen Owen's first name. Although the vampire hunter's contact information was not in her database, Saxon's question had given her a moment's pause. A girl couldn't be too careful. In fact, the moment he had mentioned his brother Santos receiving her personal items from her Denver apartment, she had immediately taken a mental inventory in her head. Any pictures of herself and Kiera together in the living room or bedroom? Nope. Check that off the list. Any vampire hunting materials lying around, any books on Romania, ancient civilizations, or articles on Dark Moon Vale? Not a one. She was safe. And now she had to keep her head about her. She had to control her emotions as well as her libido.
"I have to use the restroom,"
she whispered, wincing in feigned apology.
"But I'll be right back."
Saxon nodded and turned her loose, watching as she walked away, and she couldn't help but wonder what he was thinking. A vampire's instincts were powerful, and she knew there had to be a war raging inside his brain. Centuries of indoctrination, a lifetime awaiting one woman, pledging his soul to his destiny, waiting for that singular fate. And the reality of Kyla, an imposter, someone he didn't quite trust, something he couldn't quite name, had to be causing an internal conflict between his conditioning and those heightened instincts. Meanwhile, Kyla was trying to navigate it all, stay one step ahead of Saxon's angst. The deep blood-level connection wasn't there, and he knew it, or he felt it, but every bone in his vampiric body was committed to claiming their love, to fulfilling his blood moon and the ancient curse, to surviving beyond the month. Kyla shut the bathroom door behind her, sat down on the closed porcelain lid, and tried to catch her breath. This was so much harder than she had anticipated. Every moment was like Russian roulette, dodging a possible bullet she might never see coming. She pressed her fingers to her temples and tried to concentrate on what mattered most. What mattered next? Owen's text. He had figured out that there was something going on with her phone when she no longer messaged him, and he had fallen back on their years of training just as they had both been taught. The text was, in fact, about a vacation in New Zealand, replete with meaningless facts and descriptions, thick with a make-believe getaway itinerary, yet it was all done with precise deliberation. Every third word was a clue. Every randomized cap was a letter in a name. Every semicolon where a comma would do just fine meant to take the word as a whole and construct it with the next sequential semicolon in order to form a sentence. There were half a dozen codes embedded in that message. Did Kyla possess a photographic memory? No, she did not. But she possessed something even more important. Hundreds of hours of practice, developing speed and proficiency over many years. Reading and decoding similar messages, until she could do it as a knee-jerk reaction. The first time she'd read Owen's text, she had lifted a list of random names, denoting various vampires' children. Nathaniel's son, Storm, Marquise's son, Nikolai, Nikari's son, Sebastian, Kagan's son, Ryder, and their corresponding mothers, Jocelyn, Siapori, Deanna, and Ariel. The Silivasi children were Kyla's primary targets, along with a vampire named Braden. Any of their deaths would be a great honor, whereas Saxon's death would take care of itself. It would be a foregone conclusion, as long as Owen and Travis kept Kiera. Kyla trembled almost uncontrollably, keenly aware of the dangerous, lethal being no more than 200 yards away, waiting for her to return to the living room. She was playing such a dangerous game, but it didn't matter. Nothing else mattered. This was the moment, the situation she had been born for. Somehow, some way, she needed to find out who these vampires were. She needed to get the women and the children together in one room. And she recoiled as she acknowledged the revelation. She had to prepare for her own inevitable death. There was no way she was getting out of Dark Moon Vale alive. The objective alone told her everything Owen didn't say. Xavier Matista had decided to sacrifice Kyla's life for the cause, and she had entered the den of lions of her own volition. She hadn't even given it a second thought. She bit down on her tongue until the flesh began to bleed. Could she really go through with such a sacrifice? A suicide mission? Jumping up from the toilet, she turned on the cold water and splashed it over her face. Saxon would be growing suspicious if she lingered much longer. Her best bet, her only option, was to take the mission one step at a time. The next step, she needed to get a pen and a piece of paper, write down the vampires' names and the names of their children before she forgot, and she needed to hide it somewhere foolproof. And then, she needed to convince Saxon Olaru to help her meet a handful of specific destinies, however she pulled it off. 12. Kiera Sparrow came awake in the dark, jackknifing off the mattress. Her head instinctively turned to the right and scanned the alarm clock as she distractedly made note of the time. 2:00 a.m. And then her heart slammed into her chest. The air left her body and she froze like a calcified statue. A pair of glowing amber eyes stared down at her, the pupils 2 menacing slits. The body of the man, no, the supernatural creature, hovering above her was something out of a horror film. Hulking, brawny, and covered with dark, coarse fur. She blinked several times to clear her vision, then gasped again as wet canine lips drew back into a snarl, and flashed 2 rows of wicked sharp teeth. She started to scream, but the sound was instantly muffled by a hard, unforgiving hand pressed over her mouth. She squirmed beneath the heavy, unyielding body, and nearly hyperventilated when she felt the push, the invasive wedge, the harsh, calloused thrust of her own thighs being shoved open by a knee. What the hell? Panic slammed into her like a 2-ton truck, and she gnawed at the furry palm pressed tightly against her mouth, clawing and biting at her assailant in desperation. His hand drew back, and she shouted her alarm.
No, 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 no!
She tried to squeeze her legs together, but he was already settling between her thighs. The thought was revolting, terrifying, mind-numbing, but it was suddenly the least of her worries. As vicious drool dripped down from his jaws, the creature, the wolf, somehow managed to smile, and she recognized that menacing smirk. Xavier Matista. But how could that be? He dipped his head in a feral undulating motion and dropped his jowls to her chest. Oh, dear Lord, he wasn't going for her breasts to violate her. He was aiming at her heart to devour her. As his canines sank deep and the pain serrated her mind, she screamed like the world was ending. The shrill, terror-stricken scream pierced the darkness, and Kiera came awake with a start. Her heart slammed into her chest, and she panted, her eyes darting around the darkened room. Oh, thank God, it had only been a dream. A terrifying, indescribable nightmare. She had been dreaming, about dreaming, dreaming about waking up. She brought her hand to her chest and felt the flesh above her heart through her flimsy nightgown, audibly sighing in relief. Her clothes were intact. Her flesh was unmolested. And there was no one and nothing above her. And then she turned her head to the right, almost as an instinct, and glanced once more at the alarm clock. Her forehead beaded with sweat. It was 2 o'clock a.m., the same as in the nightmare. Was she reliving it again? Falling back asleep? Caught in an endless loop of a revolving night terror?
Wake up, Kiera,
she urged, frantically squeezing her eyes shut, then forcing them open again, and again, desperate to escape the spiraling cycle.
Wake up!
And then she heard a snarl from the corner of the room and turned to find a man, not a wolf. Xavier Matista. Watching her in the dark, stalking her sleep like a specter. She bit down on her bottom lip. She wasn't asleep, and this was no longer a dream.
Xavier?
She croaked, quaking like a leaf, still caught between her recent nightmare and this equally disturbing reality.
What are you doing here?
I couldn't sleep, he purred like an animal, his voice sending chills down her spine. Kiera recoiled. He couldn't sleep? What the hell did that have to do with her? And why was he standing in the corner of Owen's spare bedroom, in the middle of the night, stalking Kiera like a predator?
What?
She tried to reply, but she couldn't form the words. Her mouth was filled with cotton. Play for me, he rasped, his voice emerging as if through shards of glass.
Play,
she mimicked, more confused than ever. And then it suddenly struck her. The violin. He wanted to hear the instrument. Holy hell, this just wasn't happening. Remembering the alternative, the way he had climbed on top of her in the dream, the jaws of a canine that had gorged on her heart, or at least begun the bestial feeding. She quit arguing with fate and sat up in bed. This was as real got, however impossible. And as for her nightmare, perhaps it had been a premonition. Or a warning. Who knew? Who cared? She scrambled from the bed, uncaring that the nightgown Owen had given her was virtually sheer, and fumbled through the dark, trying to find the violin case. She didn't need light to play the familiar instrument. She had practiced 1,000 times with her eyes gently closed, feeling and hearing the music, relying on her instincts to find the notes, allowing her muscle memory to rock the bow, transitioning perfectly from one string to another by feel. Her fingers slid along the front of the case, unhooked the latches, and felt for the violin, then the bow, working each one free in turn. There was no time for a shoulder rest. No time to tune the instrument, no time to even tighten the bow hairs. She simply tucked the violin under her chin and began to play the first thing that came to her mind, a sonata. Not that one, Xavier barked. The one from before. Kiera halted her playing, took a deep breath, and shakily began again. Kneeling on the floor of her captive's bedroom, Kiera performed Song from a Secret Garden, praying the man and the beast inside his soul would be soothed by the rich, haunting music. 13. 2 o'clock a.m. Saxon Olaru felt like he was going mad, like something elemental had seriously misfired in his brain. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, 4 days into his Cetus blood moon, and instead of being home with Kyla, he was wandering the streets of Phoenix, Arizona. He was prowling the back alleys of a neighboring state, hunting for prey because he needed to feed. He needed to quench his mounting thirst. He needed to slake the gnawing hunger in his gut. He needed to fill the endless cavern of emptiness expanding in his soul, to extinguish his confusion and his rage. And none of it made sense. Why he had called on Julian Lacusta to stand outside on his cliffside veranda and guard his destiny this night, why he'd had to get out of the house, or why he was so consumed by primitive feral urges. This wasn't right. It wasn't even natural, not for a master warrior or a seasoned sentinel. And Saxon was not the type to lose control. He didn't get mired in swamps of confusion. He didn't have difficulty controlling his urges. And he certainly never found himself at a loss when it came to entertaining women, knowing what to do next. He should not have been at a loss with his destiny. If anything, he should have been going mad with passion, with the overwhelming urge to make love to Kyla, to fold her sweet curves beneath his hard body and sink his fangs into her jugular, to taste her sweet crimson essence. Every instinct in his body should be rising with the desire to father a child, to plant his seed within her womb, to claim her, need her, and possess her. But that wasn't what he was feeling, not by a long shot. He recoiled as the wild, confusing thoughts swirled through his mind like eddies of ice-cold snow, cringing at the truth. He did not want to make erotic, passionate love to his destiny, to taste her or hold her, to make the two of them one. The hard, ugly truth was so much more demented and disturbing. He wanted to snatch her by the neck, toss her against the wall, and sink his fangs so deep into her carotid artery that he scored his canines against her bones. He wanted to drain her of every last drop of essence and watch as she fell lifeless to the ground, silent and unmoving at his feet, no longer breathing. He wanted to punish her severely for a crime he couldn't name. And that was why he had needed to place some distance between them, to get out of his house and away from the female, to take his unspoken rage out on someone his own size. Well, at least theoretically. He needed to find a human victim, one that was tainted, corrupt, and guilty. And now, as he patrolled the streets and back alleyways of Phoenix, he wondered at his feral nature. Saxon Olaru was not a monster. Yet he was riding this blood moon on a razor's edge. Despite his casual outward demeanor, he had been hyped up, confused, and driven by unconscious instincts since the moment the moon had turned red. And holy hell, this overwhelming, rage-filled reaction was so far over the top. He may as well have been a dark one for the blackness that was roiling in his soul. For the sin he was committing against Kyla, just by acknowledging his demented thoughts. He could not begin to fathom what the female had done to deserve so much contempt. What crime had his destiny ever committed against anyone? How could the gods be that wrong? No, something was definitely amiss with Saxon. Perhaps he wasn't worthy of this gift. And after so many centuries of waiting, the weight of that statement broke his heart. A short, stocky human rounded the corner of a red brick building, entering the dimly lit alleyway. His thin lips curved into a scowl, and Saxon instantly scanned his thoughts. Bingo. The guy was a twisted misogynist, and he had just returned from a seedy motel where he had hired a prostitute, tied her to the bed, and burned the bottoms of her feet with cigarettes before beating her within an inch of her life. Safe in the knowledge that she wouldn't report it, he was now feeling high from his conquest. In the blink of an eye, a flash in time, so swift the human couldn't register it, Saxon dipped his hand into the human's pocket, retrieved a cigarette from the crumpled pack, and tucked it between his lips. "Got a light?" he asked in a friendly voice, feeling the need to play with his quarry. The human looked momentarily stunned by the sudden presence of the stranger, but he quickly regained his equilibrium.
Yeah, I guess,
he grunted in a caustic tone. He reached into his other pocket, pulled out a Playboy lighter, and handed it to Saxon. Saxon lit the cigarette and took a long, slow drag.
Thanks, man.
And then he snatched him by the throat, hauled him further into the alley, and slammed him up against a grungy wall. Removing the glowing cigarette from his lips, he held it between the human's eyes.
So tell me.
He paused to retrieve the guy's name from his mind.
Jacob, how do you think this feels?
He seared the glowing tip into Jacob's flesh, tightening his fist around his throat as the man kicked. Jacob gasped and squirmed, trying to get away from the burn. And then the cigarette went out.
Damn it,
Saxon snarled.
Don't you hate when that happens?
Releasing Jacob's throat, he pressed one elbow against his neck, keeping him firmly tethered to the wall, reached into the pocket with the lighter and lit the cigarette again.
There. That's better.
He proceeded to place burns along the human's forehead, down the bridge of his nose, and finally over his tender lips. First the top, then the bottom. Jacob whimpered and squealed like a cornered, tortured animal as the smell of his burning flesh filled the air.
Would you like me to stop?
Saxon asked, cocking his brows in question. Jacob nodded briskly, his eyes pleading with the vampire for mercy. Saxon nodded.
No problem.
And then he allowed all remaining vestiges of civility to slip away. He felt his soft hazel eyes deepen to red from his rage. His canines descended from his gums, and 10 sharpened claws elongated from the tips of his rugged fingers as he dropped the cigarette to the ground. His civil tone became a feral growl.
What do you think I am?
Jacob blanched, his skin becoming cherry, then pink, then ghostly white. He opened his mouth to answer, but nothing came out but a squawk.
Your kind has many names for my species. Many of them quite colorful. Vampire, Nosferatu, demons, the undead. I prefer bloodsucker. Would you like to know why?
Jacob peed his pants and Saxon grimaced in disgust. He wrinkled his nose.
I guess it's self-explanatory.
With that, he fisted Jacob's hair in his left hand, bent his neck at an unnatural arc, and struck so hard that he chipped the bone. As he began to feed, his rage and his inner turmoil mingled with the blood. One long, greedy pull after another, Saxon let go of his humanity, allowing his inner savage to not only rise, but take over. Time stood still. Confusion waned. Until there was only blood and instinct. He was only mildly aware that Jacob was now lying on the ground, his legs no longer twitching, his throat no longer convulsing, his whimpers no longer resounding. His heart was no longer beating as Saxon continued to tear at his flesh, bite by bite, piece by piece, spitting it out on the pavement. The warm crimson fluid coated his mouth and his chin. It soaked his cheeks and his nose, even as it ran down in rivulets, dyeing his manicured goatee. And still, it wasn't enough. It wasn't nearly enough. He lowered his claws from Jacob's hair and scored them over his chest, before impaling the flesh-covered cavity and retrieving the dripping heart. He brought it up to his mouth to gorge, moaning at the taste. He wanted more, so much more, and he no longer cared if his quarry was guilty or innocent. He rose like a panther from the alley, leaving his victim where he lay, and started to head for the street, to a nearby apartment building where he could enter the units one at a time and feast. And then he heard the music playing, as if from a very great distance, the sweet enchanting notes of a violin echoing in his head, calling to his soul like a siren. He cocked his head to the side and listened. Where was the music coming from? And by all the celestial gods, what was that otherworldly song? He sniffed the air, retreating into the nuance of his senses, trying to smell the wood, the rosin, The distinct infinitesimal scent of a singular particular instrument, a violin, amongst all the aromas of the city. He couldn't make it out. There were several stringed instruments nearby, but he couldn't distinguish between them. Besides, the music wasn't coming from the alley, nor was it coming from an apartment in the area. It was originating from his soul. He didn't know how he knew, he just did. And as his savage nature gave way to benevolence, he swept his hands through his hair, took a long, deep breath, and halted at the axis of the street and the alley. What the hell was he doing? What the hell had he been just about to do? He closed his eyes, trying to hear more of the song, to stay with the haunting melody as long as he was able, and then he scrubbed his hand over his face, drawing back a palm drenched with blood.
"Lord Cetus," he mumbled beneath his breath. "Help me, Lord. I feel like I'm lost. I don't feel as if I belong with Kyla. I feel like I belong as a note within that song."
Realizing the absurdity of his words and the futility of his prayer, he sank back into the shadows, scrubbed his face clean with the sleeve of his coat, and tried to consult his rational mind. For reasons he couldn't quite name, he knew what he had to do next, and it wasn't to consult with his king or a wizard or even one of his brothers. He needed to visit Marquis Silavasi, the ancient master warrior. Although Napoleon's blood moon had been marred by an insidious possession, taken over by a vengeful dark lord, and while Nakari's blood moon had also been tainted, with Saber Alexiaris impersonating Ramsay in order to strike at the wizard's female, Marquise's blood moon had been truly convoluted. Marquise had mistaken Christina as his mate, and he had converted her under the power of the Dark Lord Okard. In other words, stranger shit had happened. And while waking Marquise at 2 or 3 in the morning would not change the trajectory of Saxon's fate, it was at least a place to start. Someone Saxon could potentially talk to. It was better than standing in an alley in Phoenix, devouring a human's flesh like a jackal, or taking innocent human lives, something that would have violated Napoleon's laws. It was better than marching home and scrubbing Kyla's memories completely, taking decades of her private recollections, just to satisfy his psychotic sense of displacement. While Saxon didn't mind skimming Kyla's mind for bits and pieces of information when necessary, he didn't want to probe too deeply, not without her permission. Human beings had preserved few divine qualities endowed upon them by their creator, but free will was one of them, and it was not to be tinkered with lightly. There were too many potential unintended consequences, not the least of which could be a sense of learned helplessness, and in the worst-case scenario, a diminishing of the will to live. Saxon couldn't do that to his destiny. An item here or there, a glimpse now and then, especially if Kyla was afraid or in danger, that was fine. But unless and until she offered, or Saxon no longer cared about the outcome, it would require a healer or a wizard to go in that deep, to take that much out, safely, carefully, and thoroughly. Saxon sighed as the music finally ended, and his soul grew more peaceful and quiet. He knew what he had to do next. It was time to speak with Marquise. 14. Having called out to Marquise telepathically, Saxon waited patiently on the ancient master warrior's wraparound porch. The males in the House of Jaden occasionally referred to Marquise Silavasi's home as the farmhouse. But the term was woefully inadequate in terms of describing the grandeur, size, and immaculate architecture of the estate. While Marquise did live on the northern edge of the Darkmoon Forest in a traditional 3-story farm-style house, there was nothing worn down or country about it. Every room contained a custom-built fireplace. It was furnished and appointed like something from a designer's dream magazine, and it was fringed by a gorgeous crystal river meandering out back, making the property alone worth over $1 million in the picturesque mountain area. Tonight, the moon was especially dim, casting a soft yellow glow across the land, and the air was thick with the smell of juniper and pine. The river could be heard as clear as a bell. Saxon ran his hands through his hair and sighed, silently rehearsing his words, trying to figure out what he wanted to say to the ancient master warrior once Marquise appeared.
"What the devil?"
Marquise's deep, powerful voice resounded in the night, the vampire appearing as if from the mist, standing 4 or 5 paces in front of the sentinel.
"Marquise," Saxon said by way of greeting, "I'm sorry for waking you up."
The rugged warrior shrugged.
"The princess and I were awake."
Saxon frowned.
"Really? At 3:30 in the morning? What the heck were you doing?"
Then, oh damn, he thought. Bad timing.
"Oh, my bad. Sorry, Marquise."
The vampire's nostrils twitched.
"Everything all right with the king?"
Of course he would assume it was official sentinel business.
"Yeah,"
Saxon answered quickly.
"Everything's fine. This is more of a personal visit."
This time it was Marquise who frowned, and who could blame him? He and Saxon had always been cordial, respectful. They had fought many times, side by side, but they didn't exactly hang out on the weekends. With the exception of his brothers and his mate, Marquise was a bit of a loner. His demeanor turned stoic, his expression inscrutable.
"What's this about, warrior?"
Saxon glanced to the side. It was difficult to meet the warrior's gaze, and he was suddenly having second thoughts about coming. What the heck had he thought Marquise could do?
"Well," Marquise pressed him, "spit it out."
Blunt as usual. Saxon retrieved the words he had just rehearsed.
"I wanted to ask you about Christina. Your blood moon."
To his credit, Marquise didn't make a snide or insensitive remark. Rather, he studied Saxon a bit more carefully.
"You found your destiny a few days ago, correct?"
Saxon nodded.
"Is everything going well?"
At this, Saxon chuckled and shook his head, but there was absolutely no humor in the sound.
"Everything is going right as rain from the outside looking in."
"But?" Marquise prompted.
"But nothing is okay from my vantage point. I'm wound tight as a drum."
Marquise continued to stare at him thoughtfully, and then he finally nodded.
"Looks like you fed well this night. Necessity or angst?"
Saxon leaned against a post next to the railing. Of course Marquise would recognize the evidence of his recent gorging. His skin was likely glowing, his muscles were primed and almost pulsing, and his pupils were likely dilated.
"Both,"
he answered honestly. Marquise simply nodded.
"So what does any of this have to do with Christina?"
Saxon took a deep breath and dove in with both feet.
"Not sure," he began. "I just kind of wanted to know what you felt when you claimed her. What was going through your mind when you brought her home?"
Marquise snorted.
"I wanted to wring her little chicken neck. Still do sometimes."
Saxon laughed to himself. Christina still drove all the Silivasi brothers crazy, even as their sister. While the fates had intervened, sparing Marquise from mating the wrong destiny, the damage had already been done. The once human female had been converted to vampire under the protection of the Dark Lord Okard, the one who had screwed with the curse at the behest of the powerful son of Jaeger, Salvatore Nistor. It was a very long story, but in a nutshell, Okard had reversed the blood moon, presenting Christina in Siapori's place, and the entire ordeal had been hell on Marquise. Once the blood moon was over, they had adopted the fledgling girl as their sister, and had vowed to take care of her until the bitter end. Annoying or not, they had ultimately grown to adore her.
"Right," Saxon said. "But I meant more. What did you feel in your gut?"
At this, Marquise stirred fitfully.
"What's going on, Sentinel? What happened with me, with my blood moon, was nothing short of an insurrection by the Dark Lords of the Underworld, a rare cosmic event. If you're feeling something like that..."
"I don't know what I'm feeling," Saxon interjected. "Just a sense that something isn't as it should be."
He paused to consider how to phrase his next statement.
"I thought maybe... if you could tell me what was going on with you, what it felt like to be with Christina. I might have something to compare things to. Some sort of context for what I'm experiencing.
Marquise regarded him sideways, genuine concern etched into his brow. He drew back his powerful shoulders, straightened his broad, intimidating frame, and looked off into the distance.
Christina and I were like oil and water. We just rubbed each other wrong. At the same time, I had already met Siapori, so the difference was night and day. With Siapori, I felt alive, fiercely protective, and, well, constantly turned on. With Christina, it was more like a slow, painful death. Going through the motions and being constantly pissed off. Didn't help that the redhead was so defiant and insolent. She did blast me with a shotgun, you know.
Saxon grimaced, remembering the tale.
Yeah, I'd heard.
He didn't care to comment on the rest. It was too close to home. A slow, painful death, going through the motions and being constantly ticked off. The big difference? There was nothing defiant or disrespectful about Kyla. She couldn't have been more accommodating.
Look.
Marquise's gravelly voice drew Saxon out of his thoughts.
How is your destiny with you? It's not unusual for a human female to be scared or defiant. It's a whole new world for them. We're a predatory species, and they sense that.
Saxon nodded.
I know. And the thing of it is, there's nothing going on with her. She's bent over backward to meet me halfway.
Hmm. Marquise harrumphed.
Yet you want to wring her neck.
Saxon looked down at the ground, ashamed, focusing his vision on a dark brown pine cone.
Worse, Marquise. That's why I had to feed.
The ancient master warrior cracked his knuckles.
Damn, Saxon.
Saxon got it. There was nothing else to say to such a serious and jacked-up confession. He took another deep breath and quickly changed the subject.
Christina's inner wrist, the Blood Moon insignia. Did it look like it was off, not right? Like something was wrong with the markings?
How so?
Marquise asked. Saxon crossed his arms in front of his chest, settling into the conversation.
More like a wound than a work of art. Red, bruised, freshly made.
If Marquise was daunted by the description, he hid it well.
No,
he said brusquely, shaking his head.
None of that.
He paused as if thinking it over.
But it did recede over time, go away, when the spell was no longer active.
Saxon nodded, considering the warrior's words. Kyla's insignia looked better each day. The redness had faded, the bruises were healing, and its permanence was setting in. Maybe their blood moon, the spell of Lord Cetus, was finally taking hold. Maybe the etchings were just indicative of the inner turmoil Saxon was feeling. And as the markings appeared stronger, more permanent, so would he. It was imprudent to question the will, or the methodology of the gods. Marquise scrubbed his hand over his face. And for the first time, Saxon could see that the warrior was weary. It was late. Saxon should really let the vampire get back to his sleep, or his mate, whatever the case may be.
I'm not a wizard, Marquise finally blurted, almost out of the blue. Probably the last male in this valley to give anyone advice, especially on dealing with women. But the way I see it, if she's that accommodating, go with it. Follow where she leads and see what pops up.
Saxon furrowed his brow.
Come again? Not exactly sure what you're saying.
What I'm saying, Marquise growled, sounding more like his grumpy, tyrannical self, is if all this shit is just about the adjustment period, it'll work itself out. But if there is something up, some kind of interference or foul play going on, then give the female enough rope to hang herself. To let whatever dark lord or power is interfering show itself, and see what your destiny does. Just watch your back. One way or another, you need to come through this blood moon still standing.
He drew his shoulders back and stared right through him.
The House of Jaden needs you, Sentinel. You serve the king directly.
Saxon nodded, understanding the stakes. The last thing he wanted to do was screw something up so badly that he didn't fulfill the curse. He had no intentions of spending eternity in the abyss, apart from his king or his brothers.
"And say something to the other sentinels," Marquise added, almost as if he had read Saxon's thoughts. "Sometimes another pair of eyes is exactly what you need. Nakari and Brayden figured my situation out, not me, so don't keep shit to yourself. Let your brothers be your keepers. You never know."
"Warrior, is everything okay?"
Siapori's lyrical voice drifted across the moonlit landscape as she strolled onto the porch and glanced at her mate, her raven-black hair falling gracefully beyond her regal shoulders as it framed her golden eyes.
"Greetings, Sentinel. How are you this night?"
she added the moment she recognized Saxon.
"Is all well with the king?"
Saxon lowered his head in deference. Princess Siapori was a legend, after all. The blood sister of Prince Jaden and Prince Jaeger, the daughter of their race's legendary king.
"Everything's fine with Napoleon," he answered, putting the most important concern to rest. "And I'm fine. I just needed to speak with Marquise. I apologize for disturbing the two of you so late at night."
Siapori waved her graceful hand and smiled.
"Don't think of it, Sentinel. You are always welcome, day or night."
Marquise harrumphed.
"No, he's not."
He turned to Saxon and grimaced.
"I mean you are, but just... only if it's important. Which it was."
Saxon smiled then.
"Thank you, I think."
Siapori rolled her beautiful eyes.
"Ignore him. I believe he was raised by wolves, although Kitaro might object to that characterization."
Saxon's heart warmed, a wave of longing washing over him. Now that's what mating was supposed to look like. A loving woman with an adoring, protective male. Two souls that completed each other, without even trying. Maybe Marquise was right. Saxon just needed to give it a little more time. It had only been 4 days, after all. Or maybe he needed to give Kyla more rope. Give her back her phone, ask her what she wanted, let her take the lead, then follow. He wasn't sure if he was ready or willing to involve his brothers, just yet. Not unless he had to. But one thing was for sure. He would watch his back. He would sleep with both eyes open. A slow, painful death. Going through the motions. Being constantly pissed off. Damn. Just damn.
15.
Kyla sat up in bed and rubbed her tired eyes, wanting to take full advantage of